This is the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast brought to you by Art Wiederman, CPA with Ide Bailey. Whether it's taxes and investing or planning wisely, Art is the expert to make your dental practice profitable. At Ide Bailey, what inspires you inspires us. We provide a suite of accounting and advisory services dedicated to the total care of your practice. Visit our website to access our tools and resources tailored for dentists, idebailey.com/dentist. That's idebailey.com/dentist. This podcast is distributed with the understanding that Art Wiederman, CPA, and Ide Bailey, LLP are not rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Listeners should consult with their business advisors before acting on any of the information or opinions shared. If you have questions and or feedback, make sure to email Art over at awiederman@idebailey.com. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. You can also give Art a call at 657-279-3243. Without further delay, here's your host, Dental CPA Art Wiederman.
And hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast with Art Wiederman, CPA. I'm your host, Art Wiederman. I am a very, very proud dental division director at the wonderful CPA firm of Ide Bailey. For those of you who are listening for the first time, I'm located in Southern California, and I have a real special recording today. I'm really looking forward to this. When I merged my dental CPA firm with a local firm in Orange County back in 2018, a couple of years later, they merged with Ide Bailey. And Ide Bailey is, from the statistics I've read, the 19th largest CPA firm in the country. And again, imagine, doctors, if you, being a private practice dentist, that you had every possible specialty at your fingertips that you can refer to with a phone call. And when I joined Ide Bailey, when we joined Ide Bailey, I had that opportunity. And one of the amazing specialties that we have here is that we have an entire group of people all across the Western United States that work in what we call the tax controversy area. And I am going to be talking to, my guest today is Ben Peeler, who is the lead partner in our tax controversy group. And we're going to talk to you about what's going on at the IRS today. There's been a lot of news about what's going on, not only at the IRS, but at other government agencies. And I want to preface this conversation, folks, by telling you that we do not talk politics, Republican, Democrat. These are all facts that you're going to get today. And what's been going around is that, according to Reuters, the IRS is looking at cutting approximately 25% of the workforce at the Internal Revenue Service by May 15th. And what is that going to mean? Well, Ben Peeler worked with the IRS. He was an attorney for the IRS for many years, and he has many contacts there. So he is going to give you up to the minute, not up to the day, up to the minute information about what he is hearing, because he's talking to people at high levels at the IRS every single day. So you will get information about what's going on, what's going to happen with the IRS, what's going to happen to your tax refund, what happens if you're under audit, what happens if you're going to be under audit. So we're going to get to all of that in a few minutes. First, a couple of announcements. First of all, I want to thank my wonderful partners at Decisions in Dentistry magazine, www.decisionsindentistry.com. They have 140 CE courses that you can buy on top clinical issues for a very reasonable price. Go to decisionsindentistry.com. You can find all of my podcasts there. They are also, they have an incredible marketing company called DDS Media Pro. If you're looking at some marketing services, you might consider giving them a call about that. I also want to share with you that we have Business of Dentistry webinar series coming up April 23rd. I will be moderating with Ben Tuinay and Dr. Sherilyn Sheets. Dr. Sheets is going to be talking about, she's going to be talking about cracks in teeth. And Ben is going to be talking about how to change your relationship with insurance companies and also how to get better reimbursements on PPOs. We are right in the middle of tax season, folks. Our CPAs at Eide Bailly all across the Western United States have got their nose to the grindstone and getting the tax returns and extensions done. I do think that it was very, very mean of the IRS to put the final four of the NCAA men's basketball tournament and the Masters golf tournament right in the first week of April. But that's how it's been every year, unfortunately. But we still managed to watch those things, which are really important because the rest of this doesn't really matter. No, just kidding.
Be sure to check out our new Eide Bailly podcast, Ebb and Flow, a business podcast providing inspired insight on issues and trends the middle market faces. Hear unique business stories, get answers to frequently asked and unasked questions, and understand business topics that matter to you. Available now on your favorite podcast platform.
With that, I want to get to Ben. So Ben Peeler is a partner in the Salt Lake City. He's located out of Salt Lake City, and he has a team of, I think he told me, about 35 folks across the country who work in their tax controversy group, and he'll tell you a little more about that as we get into the podcast. Ben's been with Eide Bailly for about 11 years. He's been an attorney and an accountant. He specializes in federal tax controversy and procedure work, helps clients in the area of income tax, estate and gift tax, property tax, sales and use tax, estate planning, and other matters. His vast experience includes representing clients before the IRS, as well as representing the IRS before the United States Tax Court. He was with the IRS, I think he told me, for 8 years, and during litigation before the federal district courts and as a special assistant to the United States attorney. And again, as I mentioned, he leads the firm's IRS practice and procedures as a federal tax controversy and procedure specialist, and is also part of Eide Bailly's national tax office team that is committed to help clients resolve their tax issues. Wow, I'm not smart enough to be on this podcast with you, Ben. Welcome to the Art of Dental Finance and Management.
Good to be here, Art.
I appreciate having you on here. So I kind of mentioned at the beginning of the podcast that there's some changes going on in not only the IRS, but all government agencies, but we're going to focus today on the IRS. Now, I'm going to throw out some things I've heard, and then if you would be so kind, let's talk about kind of what you're hearing and what you're seeing, and specifically what it's going to mean to our dentists. But before we do that, why don't you tell us a little more about your professional journey?
Okay. So I'm an accountant and an attorney. So, you know, I started out working in as an accountant, and I decided to go to law school, and naturally that led me to tax law. So I worked for a couple law firms out of law school, and then I was in California at the time. The sort of law firm scene was kind of struggling in 2006-ish. So I moved over to the IRS and worked there for 8 years. I kind of did a little bit of everything. I was in the small business self-employed division. I did a lot of collection work there. That's where the IRS is trying to get your money and go after you. And then I moved into large business international. All those names start to change nowadays. It's kind of hard to keep track. But that's where I worked as a special assistant U.S. attorney. That's where you work with Department of Justice in conjunction with certain cases, trying to litigate things. I was a special trial attorney. So those were the cases the IRS wants to win and they focus on. So they get special trial teams put together. I left there and came to Eide Bailly. One of the reasons I came to Eide Bailly is because of the NTO that they were building. I mean, a firm our size typically doesn't have a national tax office with all the specialties, but we've invested in that, and I think it's amazing. So all of our clients can avail themselves of all the things you could at most things that you could at a big four or much larger firms, and in a very coordinated way. So, I mean, that's kind of a rundown. But I do want to add that my title is I'm the partner in charge of the tax controversy and procedure group. The procedure part is important because one of the problems with the IRS since COVID is they've lost a lot of resources, and they've had issues. We can talk about what's going to happen to those now, but we've had problems since 2000 trying to get things done with the IRS, just getting normal processes done that normally they would handle themselves. We have to go in and push it and change things. So that procedure part takes up a lot of time and work for us, just getting things fixed, that the mistakes the IRS makes. So I want to point out that there's that part of it.
You mean the IRS sends out notices that are wrong and makes mistakes? I've never heard that before. That was sarcasm, folks.
Unfortunately, very frequently, we probably have 1,000 of those a year. Between penalty abatements and then just correcting issues with the IRS, about 1,000 of them from our 80,000 or so clients.
And before we get into this, and folks, I promise this is not an advertisement for Ide Bailey, but this is interesting. I mean, I have been a CPA, I think, 1985, so 40 years now I've been a CPA. And I have sat on hold with the IRS for literally hours and hours. I mean, I think my record's about 3 hours because I needed to talk to somebody. We have a mechanism, Ben, don't we, that at the firm that you can kind of get to the front of the line before we get into our topics. We'll talk about that for a second.
Sure. So when I left the IRS and came to Ide Bailey, one of the reasons I came is they said I could do it how I wanted to. I could build the group the way I wanted to. So it just started with me and I've built it to 35 people. But one thing I said is most controversy groups in accounting firms are just lawyers that deal with the large issues. And I said, we really need people that fill that gap, because most firms, just the partner in charge of that client just has to call the IRS and figure it out. But it's not something they do every day. But I've built specialists that know what to do every day, who to call, how to get the number, how to push it to the next place. And it's just the little things that we wanted to do to make sure we could take care of our clients. It's still frustrating for them because the IRS is not fast. But so we use something called NQ, which a lot of practitioners use, but it's basically a service you pay for that kind of, it's a computer dialing service that cuts you in line, essentially gets a whole bunch of holds, and then we get to latch onto those holds and we just wait until they call us and then we jump in on the hold. So we don't have to wait nearly as long because they get all those holds in the morning. So it saves us a lot of time.
And the average person just doesn't have access to that. All right, let's get into the conversation, Ben, about what's going on. I mean, we're here in the spring of 2025. And again, folks, let me reiterate, we're not talking politics here, I promise. We have a new administration that has now been in office for a little over 2 months at the time of this recording. And again, as I mentioned earlier, what I've read is the IRS terminated approximately, set my understanding, 7,000 probationary employees. About 5,000 employees took the buyout offers that the Trump administration offered to all federal employees about a month or so ago. According to what I've read, between all of that, deferred resignation programs, attrition, terminations, they're looking at a 20 to 25% cut in the IRS's workforce to happen by about May the 15th. So that's what I've read. Why don't you tell us the up-to-the-minute data as to what's going on at the IRS and where that's going?
So you probably heard about how they had let a lot of people go, and then a judge ordered them to come back. And
right.
So now,
right.
So now a lot of employees are back, but so there's a lot of unknowns that are going on there. Those employees didn't just come back and get reassigned to their cases. They're kind of, in a holding pattern, from what I understand. So when they first left, they had to kind of assign a lot of the cases out to the agents that weren't going anywhere, or the attorneys or what have you. And that's still a shuffle that's going on. So we're still kind of waiting. A lot of agents are taking time to get back to their cases, and there was a lot of delays. It's created a very grumpy IRS for sure. So it makes it makes it very hard for us to get, a lot of times these are just people, right? And we're discussing things with them, and it's how they feel about something, how they look at something, how they see the facts. Well, that can affect our cases. So when they're grumpy and not happy, a lot of times it's hard to convince them to be objective and, respectful to the taxpayers. Not all of them, but some. But definitely, from what I hear inside, is that from high levels, is that they still plan to like push out that same amount of people, which I can tell you what I, how I feel about it. And it's not a political thing. It's just a factual thing.
No, it's not. I mean, this is not political. This is going to affect how everybody who files a tax return is going to be dealing with the IRS. So please tell us.
I mean, I work for the government, and I'll be the first to tell you it has major inefficiencies and major computer issues, technology issues for sure, that I would like to see them actually work on. I worked on committees when I was with the IRS. But right now, it's the IRS was already in a state where they really desperately needed more employees because a whole bunch of employees had left through just regular retirements. So the workforce got a lot younger. They had gotten the money that they had gotten was much needed so they could replace a bunch of those people. And honestly, we're the ones that train them because they go through training processes, but you know, how things work and how they go practically, really the practitioners have to kind of train them through cases. And so now a lot of those people are gone that just came in. And so that's going to be a gap. There's definitely going to be a gap in knowledge that affects the IRS, and it's a detrimental thing to taxpayers because if there's less people that know what they're doing, it's harder to get the right result, and I have to push longer and longer and longer.
I heard, Ben, that when the court intervened and said, no, you can't lay these employees off, and they came back to work, there weren't enough desks for them.
Yeah, I've heard lots of stories about that. I've heard stories about, a lot of them had moved far away from their offices, especially in California. I'm from California, so I know a lot of agents there. I don't live there now, but they had moved. You know, it makes sense in California to move farther away from Long Beach or Los Angeles,
sure,
to get a cheaper house. And so they moved 2 hours away or so, and now they're required to drive back. And so one of the stories is if they want to work 3 days a week, then they just have to use sick pay, which a lot of them have like tons of sick pay. So they're essentially making themselves into part-time workers so they can still transition, so to speak.
Now I've heard, again, and I talk with my Academy of Dental CPA group, and I've heard several stories about some of their clients, not any of mine, who have been in the middle of an audit and who basically the IRS said, we're just going to shut the audit down with a no change. Have you heard some of that going on?
Yes, we've experienced that. So we've had, it's not, initially we thought it was going to be a lot. So there were a few agents that said, look, I'm not going to be here in a week. They're firing me, so I got to close this case. And we did get several no change audits, but then there were a few where we were told that was going to be the case, but instead they got transferred to a new agent. And that agent obviously had to absorb other agents' inventory of cases. So they're not happy about it, but they did not close them, no change. We did get some though, but
right.
It wasn't as many as it seemed like it was going to be at first.
So we've got, and again, we've got agents who are doing audits who now have been given, because of the contraction in the IRS's workforce, a bigger caseload than the big caseload that they already had. Because from my understanding, most of these agents had more work than they could handle. But so how is that going to affect going forward? I mean, again, you don't have a lot of happy employees at the IRS with just the uncertainty of whether you're going to lose your job, the uncertainty of what's going to be dumped on you. I guess the uncertainty if you're going to have a desk, right? So, you know, what do you see for audits going forward?
I right now, we've seen more settlements. So that's been a good thing for taxpayers if they were under audit, where we got it done quicker. But it is really a personal thing. Remember, these are people. And so some of them have been upset and so just refuse to work on it or say, I've got too many cases, I don't have time. And then I've just closed the cases unagreed. So we've had probably less of that, where they're grumpy and just sort of throw the book at you.
Yeah.
And more where they're just like, fine, I'm just going to accept what you gave me and close the case. So there's a little bit more of that. I don't know how that long that's going to last, because the way the IRS is structured is there's usually separated into groups that are focused on a certain type of audit. And if they don't find results in that area, then they'll get moved back to the general program. And if you're in the general program, usually you don't get as high a grade of pay. So they typically want to work in those higher grade of pay. Now, there's been talk of them eliminating some of those programs, which would push them back in a general program, and then they have less focus. But so far, it's been a positive thing for people in an audit right now. But long-term, I don't think that changes things. It puts more pressure on the IRS to get things done with less people.
I mean, do you see them cutting 20 to 25% of the workforce? Is that what you're hearing?
Yeah. So originally, they were really scared because someone had said they wanted to see cut 50%.
Yeah, I heard that was in the news also, sure.
Yeah, but that turned out to be like a hypothetical. They said, what would you do if you had to cut 50%? And so now they said they've kind of knocked that down to this 25%. But this is not political, but I think everybody should know. The reason why there's all this consternation about firing people in the government is the unions have very strict and tight control over that. So they have a, it's hard to get rid of a government employee because of the unions exist and the rules that exist. So I think people want to move quick, and you can't really move quick as long as people are doing a minimum job. They stay there. So that's kind of like, could they cut 25%? It's really going to depend on how that works. Now, all these are rumors. I can't tell you, you know, anything for real, but I've heard that.
Of course.
Originally, the plan was to cut people, you know, just through those programs. And now they're trying to push for more voluntary retirements and taking early retirement or taking pay, you know, taking some money to leave. And that I heard also that they've sort of turned over the decision making of what to get rid of and what to keep to the Treasury Department, not so much just the people that came in as outsiders. So that I think they're trying to reanalyze it. So right now, it's definitely in flux. Who knows what really will end up being done? But I will point out one problem that's ongoing is that when the people came in to make the cuts, they wanted to really figure out ways to automate things in the IRS and improve the automation of computers. And I think what they're running into is something that I saw. I mean, I worked for the IRS many years ago. 2014 is when I left. But where it's hard to do that because the same thing, the union wants bodies. They don't want to eliminate jobs. So it's hard to automate things in the IRS because that's sort of the trade-off, right?
So what you're saying maybe is that because of these unions, whether there's going to be a 20 to 25% cut in the workforce, Ben, could end up being a decision made in the courts, right?
Or, yeah, something, it could be a target, but then, you know, because of all that pushback and difficulties in the courts or just in labor relations, trying to keep everybody motivated and happy.
Right.
That might come to let something less.
So I'm assuming that I'm guessing that you've probably told your team of 35 professionals, hey guys, you know, we have to be a little more sensitive to these IRS employees and a little more understanding of what they're going through. Because my experience in working with the IRS is, and folks, here's the deal. These are people like you and I. They have a job to do. Their job is to collect taxes. And if you, and this is advice I'm going to give you, and Ben, you tell me if you agree or not. If you start fighting with the IRS and you start yelling at the IRS and you start, you know, just being confrontational, the IRS is much more powerful than you will ever be, doctors. So I always made friends with the auditor. I always tried to say, hey, I know you have a job to do. Let's get this done together. Right? Isn't that the best way to do this? And especially now with this environment of people not knowing if they're going to have a job tomorrow at the IRS, right?
Well, I always preach to be cordial and professional, but never be... believe them because
right.
Some of the best agents are very good at being friendly and getting information from you that maybe you didn't understand was actually hurting you. And then they gather that information and they couch it in a way that could hurt you. But yeah, we make friends with a lot of these people and we know them. And some of them I know from known for years and years. And so it's sad to see them get disrupted like this. Cause you know, everybody just wants their job to be if they're doing a good job, they don't want to be punished for that. So I agree. That's the way you should approach it, but don't make sure you run something by your accountant. If they're going to ask you for something, make sure it's the right thing to give or the right way.
Oh, absolutely. Just a couple more points, and I want to move on to some other stuff. So there was a quote from former IRS Commissioner John Koskinen that he said he made a comment to the Associated Press, quote, "A reduction of tens of thousands of employees would render the IRS dysfunctional." Do you agree? And then more talk about what's going to happen with refunds and the processing of tax season. I read this morning that the IRS has processed up to today about 70 million returns, and that they've actually done a pretty good job in this tax filing season of processing. So what are you seeing? How do you think, because everybody's worried about, oh my gosh, they're going to cut all this, you know, workforce. Is my refund going to be delayed? How do you see that working?
Well, the IRS already is dysfunctional, unfortunately.
Okay, so then let me correct what the former IRS commissioner, no, but I mean, you know what I'm saying.
He's adding on that it's already had problems adjusting to so many law changes and so many programs that the Congress created since COVID, right? It doesn't have the resources to deal with that. We are seeing problems. I mean, even if they're processing the returns now, we still have returns that weren't properly processed from the COVID years, where we're still chasing refunds and we're still, the computers will automatically do things that if we don't have humans involved to fix the problems, it can be horrible. So we could spend months or years. I've got one case where we're trying to fix what the IRS does, and every time the IRS touches it, it messes it up. But since 2011, it's been going on before I even came here. It's been out of problem. So we have all kinds of things, like there's phantom interest being assessed against taxpayers that the IRS can't figure out why, and it takes a manually. Someone has to go and manually change it. And so one of the biggest problems and why it will be dysfunctional is we've really had to rely on the taxpayer advocate service in the last 4 years to get things done, because they just get us to someone in the IRS oftentimes. And because right now, if you call in, that person you call into does not know how to get you to the right person that has the authority to fix some of these problems. So we need the taxpayer advocate. And then they're losing employees, and there makes them less responsive. So that's mainly what you see right away, is that there are more problems caused because it does take a human to get, you know, the IRS has like 5 different databases. I don't know if you knew that, but to get those things moved over to each one and fixed. So it becomes a mess.
You mentioned the taxpayer advocate. So folks, what the taxpayer advocate is they are a group at the Internal Revenue Service that if you feel that the IRS has made a serious mistake, treated you wrong, made an error, and they're just not fixing it, they're kind of the cavalry who will come in and theoretically help to fix a wrong. Did I say that right, Ben? Isn't that kind of what they do?
Yeah, they basically get us to the person we need to.
Right.
Because if you don't already have a notice, but you know you have a problem, you have to go tell the IRS, I need to talk to this person. And the way they work, unless it's been assigned to them, they're not going to start working on it. But Koskinen is right. Like this, it take away more of these resources that we were barely getting in training. This may not be the same thing with all the government agencies, but with the IRS and the position it was at, losing those people will create a gap in service for sure.
And one more thing. So we all know that back, and folks, you may or may not know this. So back in 2017, when President Trump started his first term in office and the Republicans controlled Congress, in December of that year, they passed the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which cut rates, created Section 199A, all these things that got created, cut the corporate tax rates. And when they created that tax law, it was scheduled to expire, meaning go back to what it was in 2016 at the end of this year, 2025. Well, that has not changed. So Congress is going to do something, Ben, with this. President Trump wants to make all of those changes permanent, and he has about another 18 to 20 initiatives, it's my understanding, that he wants to make permanent. Now, we're not going to get into the horse trading that goes on and what's going to happen and all this stuff. But I mean, there is going to be a new tax law before the end of the year. I would say probably a pretty good, chance of that. How is a reduced IRS workforce going to do all their work and then implement all of these new changes? How does that work?
Well, it's going to be a nightmare because,
that's what I thought you were going to say.
You've heard of ERC. Like ERC comes from the same vein, right? But it still has not been implemented in the IRS. They're still deciding to this day what to do with that. So you change these programs. CPAs and people who prepare tax returns are always looking for some consistency to make sure they can make decisions for clients. This makes it very hard to make decisions for when you change the law so often. And then the IRS, when they can't implement it fast enough or correctly, then that's what creates all these procedural problems. So,
I think it's very real. And by the way, folks, we are going to be doing Don Watson, who is a partner in our tax group in Tustin. He and I will be doing potentially two webinars, which we will keep you up to date on. Once Congress and the president passes and the president signs a tax bill, and we'll give you the up to date of what's going on. So, not going to do that yet because we don't have a tax bill, but we get towards the end of the year. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, Ben, as I remember, passed, I want to say it was like December 27th. And talk about a nightmare for CPAs. You're trying to do tax planning for your clients. And then on December 27th, and they've done this to me two or three times in my career, they pass a massive tax law. So we can talk about that all day. But take a second before we go on. I want to talk about some other things. Let's talk a little bit about what your group at the IRS, you're not with the IRS, you're with iBailey. I know that. Okay, what your group at iBailey does and how, if a doctor is getting audited or they got a notice or something, talk a little bit about what you do. And I want you to give out your contact information because, folks, I'll tell you what, you're dealing with people, not only Ben worked for the, do you have other folks in the group that have been with IRS?
Many
of them.
Probably about half of our people have IRS experience.
So you've got people that know how the IRS works and that can help you if you have a tax form. So talk a little bit about what you guys do, and then I'd like you to give out your contact information, which we will also put into the show notes.
Yeah, it's important for people to understand there's really four areas to controversy. We all know about the audits, right? IRS calls those examinations. So when you get in an examination, depending on what the issues are, we have, unfortunately, a lot of doctors and lawyers that get examined maybe they got involved in some scheme or something like that. Sometimes that happens, but just regular examinations, just proving expenses. We're there to help move that examination along. A lot of times the agents, will essentially take advantage of a taxpayer and just say, hey, give me this documentation, not tell you the ins and outs of it. We talk about car and truck expense and things like that, where they'll tell you, we're not going to accept it because you didn't do it right. There's what agents don't know is there's a difference between evidence they collect and evidence that would be allowed in court. And so usually we can merge that problem. A lot of our work is done in appeals, where we take an exam that didn't go right and we get a settlement in appeals. And so almost all of our cases settle that way. Collection is another area. That's where you may not think you owe the tax, or the IRS, asserted something that you don't believe is correct, or you just need to pay on your own timeline instead of the IRS's timeline, or they're trying to take your house or something. Collection, we help prevent, work. There's a lot of benefits the IRS allows you to take advantage of in the collection area. But penalty abatement is one. So the IRS switched during COVID to automatically assert penalties because they don't have the resources to manually decide if a penalty applies. So the computer now sends out a notice. They did just relieve a whole bunch of years of penalties, but billions of dollars. But those penalty notices still come out automatically now. And so we probably resolve 1,000 of those a year. They take a form that you have to submit, or sometimes just a phone call. Then the last thing, the procedural part, is basically that can be helping someone figure out if a position on a return is safe or correct. Sometimes there's processes and procedures if you're taking a position on a return that sometimes the IRS doesn't like, but we want to dispute it. There's procedures you can take when you're filing the return so you can't be penalized for the position. You're notifying the IRS that it's coming. That doesn't mean you'll get examined, but you have to follow certain steps. So we often help with that, or the back end of just fixing misapplied payments or any of that.
Let me ask you a question, Ben. So we have a doctor out there who's listening. We have thousands of doctors all over the country. They're working with a CPA who's and maybe they're under audit, and maybe that CPA is having real problems with the IRS and they don't know what to do. You can come in if a doctor has a maybe they have a good CPA and they're just going through, we've talked about all the challenges one has if you don't really know how the IRS works, and you could come in and take over an audit for somebody, could you not?
Yeah, we're glad to do that, but sometimes we consult with a lot of CPA firms, local CPA firms in all of our offices to just give them advice about what to do, or the client what to do strategically, or what the IRS can or can't assert, or what they should expect. We can just get them in the right direction. But yeah, we can. One of the things about an examination is the person who prepared the return is technically a witness, and you don't necessarily want the witness speaking with the IRS. So you need a buffer, especially if there's unreported income or there's a position that the IRS believes is incorrect, captive insurance companies, conservation easements, all these kinds of things that the IRS, you know, goes after.
The dirty dozen.
Because one of the problems is the penalties. Let's say even if you lose it, you want to be able to protect the penalty issue. So you don't want those people being the witnesses. So you can buffer and have it go through a representative like me. And then, of course, there's even chances that cases can go to fraud or things like that you have to watch out for.
So bottom line, folks, is if you have a problem with the IRS and you're frustrated or you're scared or whatever, or you need some help, I mean, this group, it's as good as it gets. I've worked with them with some clients. Their folks are top-notch. Ben, give out your contact. How would someone, if they have a question or something, how would someone get a hold of you?
Emailing me is great. And that's just bpeeler@ikebailey.com, which is B as in boy, and peeler is like a potato peeler, at ikebailey.com. Or anybody can call me, 801-456-5476. And I'm glad to just get somebody on the right path or give them some advice. Like ERC is one big issue right now. Always glad to talk about that. Or sometimes people have perceived that the IRS is sort of weak right now. And so there's a lot of programs and things, promotions that people are offering to save you money on taxes.
Oh my God,
I'm aware of all of them, and I can tell you the ins and outs of them and the risks.
Yeah. So, oh my God, you just opened up a whole bunch of things. I'm talking about. Let's start off with ERC. So, we're getting calls today. We processed in our dental group about 150 ERCs. I became didn't want to, but I became an expert in ERC, and we did everything by the book. We had several clients go rogue on us and go to these companies, and now they're having to pay this money back. So what's going on with ERC right now? I know IRS just came out with a frequently asked question publication about when you report the additional wage. But tell us what's going on with ERC. I know they haven't issued all the payments yet. What's going on with that?
There's about 1 million returns not processed. So we're still waiting to find out from the IRS what they're going to do with them. Sometimes we hear rumors that they'll deny them all, and sometimes we hear rumors that they'll just allow them all. So we're not sure which way they're going to go. The people I talk to hear frustration from the executives or, you know, those who make decisions like that. I mean, there's no IRS commissioners, there's acting IRS commissioners. So a lot of those things, I don't think those people want to make the decisions. The FAQ could be said to have created more questions than it answered. Because the IRS, you know, they gave us rules to follow before, which, you know, CPA firms are bound to follow. And right. then a lot of, we're told a lot of different things by other people. And now the IRS has issued these sort of taxpayer favorable FAQs, but they make some questions. Like the biggest one is a lot of people who didn't pay, you know, when you claim an ERC credit, you're supposed to reduce the expenses for wages on your income tax return and pay the taxes on that at the same time. So you got this credit on your employment tax side, but you'd have to pay some income tax back. And a lot of people did not do that. But the IRS said, hey, you can just pay this as gross receipts or gross income in the year you received the ERC, which that we don't know what statutory authority there is for that. That's essentially volunteering to pay the government some money for which we don't know what code section it belongs under. And we've asked the question, the IRS, what does this mean? Because people, you know, I mean, are they going to be bound to pay? Or are they just voluntarily paying so they can sleep at night? We're not sure what it means. And the same thing for those people, see how that puts the people that follow the law in a worse position than the people that didn't follow the law. Because if they pay their taxes in a later year, so say they got their ERC in 2024, and then they report the income in 2024. Well, if you reported it, you didn't get your ERC till 2024, but you reported the reduction in wages in 2021, then you paid more interest and you'll pay, you know, you're paying far earlier and maybe interest and penalties back then than you would in the later year.
So it's complicated. And so if any of you have filed legitimate ERCs, and I can promise you that, you know, we followed the rules. I did about 150 of them, Ben, and we did one of them that was not tied to the mathematical calculations of reductions in revenues and things like that. And that was a legit, that was, we had one doctor in a large metropolitan area where there were nine pronouncements from the state about from that city about shutdowns, and we followed them all. We have them all documented. The government order. And that's where where these companies went rogue by saying, well, you know, you had this government, there was this government order, and because you had to limit your the amount of dentistry you did. And folks, that's a bunch of, I can't say bad words on this podcast or I'll get in trouble, but horse manure, I think, is allowed. But anyway, just be aware that if you have an ERC coming, again, feel free to call Ben. He'll give you kind of what the update is on that. But you just need to be patient on that. Another thing, Ben, let's talk about, and this is something that affects our dentists, is the shareholder loans issue. So, you know, most of you, many of you out there, especially in California where I'm at, because in California, we cannot be LLCs as dentists. Dentists cannot be LLCs by law. I mean, you can, but you won't have any liability protection if something happens. But so you're an S corporation, and let's say doctors, you make $1 million of gross revenues and you net 300. So, you know, if you take 300,000, you can take money out of your S corp in two ways. One is distributions and the other is by W-2 salary. Well, you know, theoretically, maybe you take 150,000 out of salary and you pay the Social Security tax and the Medicare tax, and the other 150 you take is distributions. We unfortunately see many doctors who don't take any W-2 salary, or worse, they just take money out as shareholder loans. So on what's called your balance sheet, there's a huge number that's kind of a ticking time bomb. So I think I set the table, Ben. Talk about shareholder loans in an S corporation and talk about not taking salary in S. Talk about that, because that's really hits right at the core of our dentists and why it's important that they understand the rules.
Yeah. So this is something that when I was with the IRS, we were trying to find a way to automate the examination of all the S corporations, because almost all S corporations have this problem. And that would be like millions of people that would get audited all at once by a computer, but didn't happen. So now people, you know, they think, well, everybody else does it. I pay myself a low salary and, But then when you get audited and the IRS comes around, that's a very painful situation because you have to pay a reasonable salary, right? You have to have reasonable compensation from your corporation, which a lot of, there's case law that's been, you know, determined. And so that can be, depending on how your practice is structured, could be everything you earn if you're the only person that's earning any money. If you have other people that are working for you, that could be a different analysis. But that can be if I only had $150,000 in salary, would be probably an adjustment. There's inconsistencies in the IRS and audits. And so sometimes if you just are paid to the FICA limit, there's agents that just let that go. But that's not the legal principle. Right. Now, a lot of people know this, and so they're worried about it, or they were audited and they pushed it to shareholder loans. But a shareholder loan has to be a bona fide debt instrument. And so the problem that people run into is that, first of all, a lot of them don't even have a signed loan agreement, which if you're borrowing more than $100,000 in most states, then it wouldn't be a bona fide loan because it violates the statute of frauds. And then there's all the other elements that you have to be aware of. But so we're always encouraging people, you need to have a loan. You got to have a plan for repayment. I mean, you got to have a loan agreement. Should be collateralized somehow, which is hard to do when you know, it's just
you're the owner or the guy, right? Or the
lady. And like usually you're just collateralizing your stock, but you're the owner and the debt holder. So that could be a problem. But IRS likes a market rate of interest. That's not necessarily the law, but that's one factor. And, you know, if you're not paying interest, like actually paying it, and it's and the, you know, the corporation is accruing it and reporting it, then that's a problem. So like you want actual payments, actual interest accumulated or accrued and reported as an income item.
When we did that, I think it's 7872 is if I remember the code section, and the IRS gives you the lots of different rates, and there's one rate that you use in particular. The other thing about S corporations and taking loans to shareholders, so doctors, look on your look on your balance sheet. It's the fourth page of your tax return. If there's a huge number on there, hundreds of thousands of dollars, there's a couple things. Can't the IRS come back and say, no, doctor, you didn't do any documentation of loans. So we're going to treat these as distributions and distributions in excess of your basis in your S corporation stock is a capital gain. So you're going to end up paying taxes on it currently, or when you ultimately sell your practice and you dissolve your corporation and you have $500,000 of shareholder loans, you're going to have a taxable event, right? Am I getting this right, Ben?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. But also make sure that when it's not just a revolving line of credit either. If you're borrowing, it's like they expect you to borrow a certain amount. If you're just paying personal expenses willy-nilly out of your account and it doesn't track with the loan agreement, you're going to get stuck with that distribution scenario.
I want to go back a little bit to the audit scenario and what doctors you should be doing. Now, we're hearing on the news, as we've talked for the last 45 minutes or so, Ben and I, the IRS's workforce is being reduced significantly. There's chaos, dysfunction, whatever you want to call it. So you might be thinking, oh, wow, now that means I can just do kind of whatever I want because they're so dysfunctional, they're never going to catch me. So let's start talking about reporting of income or lack of reporting of income. And doctors, I'm going to be very blunt with you. I have fired 3 clients in my career that I found out were taking cash into their dental practices and not reporting it. So at the end of the day, folks, my attitude has always been, you report 100% of your income accurately, 100%, no discussion, no negotiation. And then we'll talk about what you run through as expenses. But Ben, talk about kind of number one, I mean, people should not be given a get out of jail free card here because of all this stuff going on to just cheat. And talk about reporting income in your dental practice.
Yeah. So of course you always have to report all the income. That means like all the bartering income. That's
bartering income.
Yeah,
yes.
One of the first things that they'll look at. They'll do what's called a cash T. So they'll just go look in your bank statements and see what got there, personal and business, and hit all of you with all of the deposits. And then you have to go prove each deposit is not income if you're going to go that route. If there's significant amount of unreported income, then the agents are often required to make at least a check to see if they should refer it as a fraud case. And if it is a fraud case, and that can be income or expenses. Like sometimes we have doctors and dentists or lawyers that, for instance, might have baseball tickets or something, and that they use for the practice, and then they sell some of them, and then they deposit in their personal account, and they had deducted on their business account. Yep. Or anything like that.
I've run into that.
We've had people, could be just $10,000, $15,000, and then they assert fraud, which is a 75% penalty. But more importantly, we've had to fight like crazy to get rid of the fraud because most people can't practice law, dentistry, or medical practice with a fraud conviction. Right. So it's even if it's a civil one, it's reportable to most of the ethics boards and things like that. So that can be a lot more trouble than it's worth. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people think, well, my friend did it and I'm not going to get caught either. But when you are the one, and the IRS is still going to do it. And part of this plan to reduce the amount of people is to automate some of these things. And maybe they do. So you still have to be very careful because you don't want to be the one. And there's lots of ways to just automatically be caught for those things.
So. Yeah. So Ben, you're an attorney and you've worked with the IRS. Doctors, you may or may not realize, you may not or may not look at this. You sign your tax returns, and we, as your tax preparers at Eide Bailly or whoever your CPA is, sign your tax returns under penalty of perjury. Now, I have used that many, many times in talking to people. Ben, what does it mean as an attorney when I, as an individual, my wife Lynn and I sign our tax return under penalty of perjury, or you know, somebody at Eide Bailly, the CPA, Don Watson, you, whomever, signs it? What does that mean?
Well, in the legal world, we call it a jurat, which is basically saying, if any of this stuff is proven on here to be incorrect and I knew about it, that's fraud. So it's like you're attesting to something just as if you swore it in court, right? So it's if you sign a jurat, and every tax return has one, and the preparers are also signing saying that everything they've reviewed belongs in the right place on there. So you're bound by it. So a lot of times we get people who say, well, I didn't know how that would play out, or this, that, and the other. And you can rely on your professionals. That's true. But if you sign that jurat and you knew something that you did not report to your accountant, then that's tax fraud. So it's an automatic sort of affirmation that you can't get out of unless you go a long way to prove it.
And people, quite frankly, and this is rare, I mean, you have to really, really commit bad fraud. People go to jail for tax fraud, do they not?
Yeah, and that's usually a dollar amount kind of thing, or you know, very obvious something that the IRS is after. But I've seen the IRS go after people just for providing fraudulent invoices, even though they weren't, you know, more than $100,000. So you could be very problematic.
So the message, folks, is this: yes, the IRS, as Ben said earlier, maybe they were dysfunctional before January 20th of this year when we had a new administration and all these changes happened. But the fact of the matter is the IRS has significant, significant power that if you don't follow the law, they will get you. I don't care if they cut the workforce by 20%. If they cut the workforce by 20%, they're going to focus on the tax cheaters, the people that are keeping, you know, big money away from the government and things like that. So just be aware that, you know, lean on your tax professional, do what's reasonable, and report all your income. I want to hit a couple of other things before we finish up today. Let's talk about documentation that doctors have to have, especially just, I'll hit like automobile, travel, meals, entertainment, family members on the payroll, or other hot buttons. So talk about what types of documentation that my doctors who are in practice need to have just in running their business to be ready for an audit at any time.
Yeah, some people don't understand with like travel and meals. When the law changed, it also made it very statutory strict requirements to document those things. So sometimes people live in the old world where you thought, oh, well, if I just have it on my credit card, you know, that should be enough. But the IRS, is Congress actually created laws that said you have to have certain things for where there were lots of abuses, right? In travel and meals, there's lots of abuses. And they took away some things, you know, some fun things that you can't deduct anymore. But that's why those elements have these new strict requirements. It's not something you can just fudge or do later. It's a contemporaneous requirement. And that's why we say, hey, just document it. Like if you just, you know, there are services you can use, there's apps you can use, but when it comes to cars, we can't defend you if you don't know where you went or what you did or what the purpose was. So if you don't keep track of that, that's a problem. Another thing is material participation, which is could be a problem. That's one where you really should keep a log and keep records. I know it seems like, oh my gosh, I have to keep this log. But if you just do it based on your calendar or even incorporate your calendar into a log, then it's there when you need it. And I mean, that could be the difference between, you know, deducting something now or having to wait 5-6 years, especially if you're in real estate.
Right. So the way that works, doctors, is this. Your dental practice that you go to every day, it's really not an issue. All you need to do is show the IRS agent that your schedule every day, 4 days a week, whatever. That's not an issue. What Ben is talking about is it may be that you have a side business.
Or your wife does, or your husband does.
Right, or any of that stuff. And the fact is that if you have a loss in that business and you show that you what's called materially participate, that's another 3-hour conversation, which we're not going to get into. If you materially participate under the IRS's rules, then you get to deduct those losses currently against your dental practice income. But if not, it's what's considered a passive activity, and those losses go into a holding tank until you either generate revenues or you sell or dispose of the activity completely, not just in part. So that's another thing is if you have side business, especially, or if you want to be treated as a real estate professional. Well, wait a minute, I own 2 rental properties. I run a dental practice 1,500 to 1,800 hours a year. Oh, but I have 2 rental properties. I'm a real estate professional, so I can deduct these losses. You're shaking your head here on this.
Well, you can't do that, right? 750 hours, and it has to be a percentage of the total hours that you work. So you might not apply. But one thing I'll also say about the record keeping is sometimes it's passive activities are fine, and any of these other deductions that people have. What people don't realize is if you have losses and they're carrying forward, you still have to keep the records from all those years ago. The other one that we keep running into now is basis. So proving your basis in your entity, if you don't keep the basis records, not just an accounting of it, but the actual checks deposited into your business, you know, if you don't keep all those records, then you will lose basis.
Right. And folks, basis is so important when you sell, when you make distributions. So what I would do is probably not your responsibility to keep the basis records, but you would say, CPA, tax preparer, are we keeping correct S corporation or partnership basis? Just please show me the records, and then that's what you hire us to do. One more thing. The IRS has their dirty dozen, Ben, and I can tell you folks, in 40 years of tax practice, I have talked more doctors out of making investments that were only tax investments. I have fired clients over it. So we know in the area for dentists, welfare benefit plans, insurance companies where you insure aliens, things like that, conservation easements, trust setups that hide income. So talk about those, the IRS's dirty dozen. Talk about those things for taxpayers and why they're just not a good idea.
Another one is monetized installment sales.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a That's a big one. Another one is the Native American tax credit, which is one that's being pitched all around the country right now. And I'll say that that one, I've looked into it directly, and it is not a, I cannot find any legal way that this could be a possible credit. I've also discussed it with the IRS and many other people. So watch out for that one. It's basically just people taking people's money for an imaginary deduction. Conservation easements, that's a tough one because, you know, they're perfectly legitimate ones. Right. But there's the syndicated easements got their own statute so that they could be reduced. And then that industry pivoted to what we call a fee simple interest donation instead of a syndicated conservation easement donation. It's roughly the same thing. IRS thinks it's the same thing. It's being fought out, but people should know that there's risk to that because essentially very similar position to what was, you know, you can only take 2.5 times deduction under the syndicated easements nowadays because of the law. Statute was changed. So this new one is basically the same. IRS thinks it's the same. You have to be very careful. The problem with that is that they come in and tell you that, we're going to set aside $1 million to litigate this so that we can win it. We believe in it. And then many of my clients, when they've been audited, there's law firms associated with the setup of this and the defense of it. And they just exhaust all those fees and then tell you to settle. So it was really just, you know, anything that you were told it was going
to
be.
Have you had to deal with the 643B trust issues? Have you had any of those?
We go through it and explain to the clients why we don't think it's effective under the facts. I haven't had one that was examined because we haven't had a client that was involved in one or picked up a client that was involved in one and then had to dispute it with the IRS. But
so here's the deal, doctors. You're not tax professionals. That's why you hire folks like us. Okay. If someone brings you an opportunity and the only economic benefit that you're going to get is a huge tax write-off, please call us. Please call Ben. Please call me, because we don't want you to get in trouble. And here's the deal. Maybe you'll get away with it. Maybe they won't audit you. But do you really want to take that chance, right?
I mean, and not only that, like now you see in social media these constant ads that say, if you're paying any tax, then you should contact us because your CPA doesn't know what they're doing. But they're really just an angle trying to take advantage of the IRS not auditing people. But
take your money and take fees from you. So
yeah, and most of it's not really advice that you should pay for, because it's just something you could actually just get straight from the internet yourself if you wanted to take the risk. And you know, if you pay a professional, they can protect you. But these people are typically not, you know, designated professionals. So they're not.
And how about all these ERC shops that told you that you could get the credit if you're breathing to the left one day? And now how many of them have gone out of business? And you know, I mean, that's, we knew this was going to happen. So
yes, we pick up the pieces for a lot of those people. Yeah. And you know, but we can, and a lot of it, the IRS has been pretty helpful in fixing some of those if the people were not knowingly doing it. And we have a lot of people that were told some things and they didn't know the difference. And so, but people should know, we've had clients be criminally investigated, because when the IRS is going after the scheme, they're going to go after everybody in the scheme. And so you have to protect yourself. So
Ben Peeler, partner out of Salt Lake City in our tax controversy and procedures group, thank you so much. Great, great information for my listeners. One more time, your contact information.
Yeah, bpeeler at idbailey.com or 801-456-5476, or plenty of stuff on our webpage that you can go to that has all my information on it as well. It's idbailey.com, and just go to controversy.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. And again, doctors, I will tell you that I sleep a lot better at night knowing that I have Ben Peeler and his team one phone call away if I have a problem, which I did not have those resources when I was in my own practice for 33 years. I did pretty well with the IRS, but my goodness, I mean, having Ben and his team with the expertise that they have is just incredible. So Ben, hang with me as I take the podcast out. Doctors, again, we're in our seventh year of this journey in this podcast. I am so honored and humbled at the thousands of people who listen, the people that email me, the people that call me. Please send me an email if you have any thoughts about what we're doing. A. Wiederman, that's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at idbailey.com. All of our employees at Ide Bailey, very easy to get a hold of. Our first initial and then our last name, and then at idbailey.com. My phone number direct to my computer is 657-279-3243. Give me a call. If you're in the middle of tax season here and you get a call from your CPA on April 14th, by the way, Joe, you owe $80,000. You got to pay it by tomorrow. One of the things that we work really hard in our dental group, you know, Henry Assatorian, Pam Chamberlain, Don Watson, and I, is to make sure that if you owe money to the IRS or the state that you live in, that you know it's coming. And that we do everything we can to legally minimize your taxes. But one of the things we work really hard at, folks, is in October, November, December, meeting with every one of our clients who will meet with us and do the best we can to project where they're at and to give them 6 to 9 months notice, probably 6 months notice that they're going to owe taxes. So please, A. Wiederman at idbailey.com or 657-279-3243. You know, check on our Business of Dentistry webinar series, April 23rd, with Art, you know, me as a moderator, Ben Tunay, and Dr. Sherilyn Sheets. Please go to Decisions in Dentistry's webpage at www.decisionsindentistry.com. They have 140 CE classes, clinical, as good as it gets, for a very, very reasonable price. Ben, thank you so much for your time and your expertise, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate having you one phone call away.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Any questions anybody has, just let me know.
Thanks a lot, Ben. All right, and with that, folks, I want to thank you again for the honor and privilege of your time. That will be it for this edition of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast with Art Wiederman, CPA, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. The Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast is produced by Ide Bailey in partnership with Art Wiederman, CPA, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, and the Academy of Dental CPAs. For audience questions and feedback, email Art Wiederman, awiederman at idbailey.com. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N. At eidebailey.com. Or you may call Art at 657-279-3243.